So yeah, the process is actually it's a committee of some extremely talented women helping sort of reviewing the games. I think that's important to mention. It's not me. You can't bribe me, basically. That's smart.
You can still try,
You
but
can
it
still
won't get you
try,
far.
like, yeah, but you can't.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Business of Video Games podcast with me, your business pathfinder, Shamster Johnny. This is the podcast where we talk about the business of the video games industry and try to uncover the secrets and dark mysteries of video games. This podcast is made possible by you, our dear listener, who spreads the word about the podcast, so please keep doing that. It's made even more possible by our precious Patreon backers who throw a few pesos our way, allowing me to pay for editing. And as a reward, they get to choose topics and subjects for us to deep dive into. If that sounds interesting, you can find us on Patreon. Today's episode, we have Astrid Mia Refstrup visiting us. Astrid is the developer relations and business manager at Wings. And Wings, in turn, is a games fund that specializes in funding women and marginalized gender developers. We talk about Astrid's background running an indie studio and how Wings operates. And really, the heart of the matter, how the heck do you balance business excellence while running a mission on promoting diversity? How do you do that? Is it possible? So let's have a listen. Hello, Astrid, and welcome to the podcast. I'm super happy to have you here. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you, and thank you for having me.
Fantastic. So as always we do on the podcast, let's start with you. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your origin story? How come the sorting hat put you in video games and not in the oil industry? Because I assume that's the two options of the sorting hat.
I started in fashion, and then stuff happened and I ended up in games industry. But yeah, I'm Astrid. I use she, her pronouns. And I've been in the industry, I think, professionally for about 8 years. I did try to take an education in game design, but ended up being in visual communication. And then just after that, I did not follow the advice I would give other and created my own indie studio.
Oh, no.
And then by luck and like very rapidly learning a lot of stuff, I made that running for almost 8 years. And recently I joined Wings. I also been working with Kaulo Knights, a game fund, as a part-time job for four years while I was running the studio. And alongside Wings, I'm also studying law on the weekends. So my hobby. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm proud of it. It's a lot of fun. Like, any adults should go take an education. It's way easier when you know what you're doing instead of like 21 and drunk.
Okay, so that's the first pro tip for today. Go get an education when you're an adult, not when you're 21 and focusing on drinking.
Exactly.
But so wait, I have to ask then, is it truly a hobby in the sense that you're interested in law and just very interested in the topic, or do you want to use it practically as well?
I want to use it practically. I'm already using it practically, I think. Of course, when you're running a company, a lot of stuff come across your table that you have to figure out. And I learned quite quickly that I actually enjoy those things. So that is like everything that's regarding like labor law, I thought was interesting. Like what can I do? What can I not do if I want to make an equal company in Denmark? Tax laws, I had some legal challenges there. I brought in investment from NetEase at some point. So there's like always, like it was always something with law and figuring out like how you can get around it or use it to your best advantages. So yeah, it became a hobby, and I had a really good lawyer in my previous studio, Robert, that sort of became a little bit of a mentor there. And yeah, then I just decided that, wow, you can do this part-time, so why not do
That's
it
fantastic. Okay.
On the weekends? Yeah.
Okay, so this is, I think you're the first guest who's moonlighting as a side hustle as a legal person. But it's, you know, would 21-year-old Astrid have guessed that you would be taking late-night courses in
Never
law?
And also, like, 27-year-old Astrid thinking of starting a game studio would also never have thought of that education as a thing at all. Like, I'm very anti-establishment.
Okay.
It grew on me.
Fantastic. Okay, so let's not move on from your history yet, because I think there's more interesting things to unpack. But tell us a little bit about your the studio, Triple Topping, correct?
Yeah, so I ran Triple Topping, a studio based out of Copenhagen. We started to be like an office, but then COVID taught us a lot. Then it became a hybrid studio. We were making indie games, narrative games, if you want to pick a tough genre for Steam. And that's you should go for it.
Yep.
And I had a lot of fun. I tried out a lot of stuff with the studio of like, how can I make a more inclusive, diverse, equal workplace?
Mm-hmm.
I definitely also learned my own limitations mm-hmm. within that. I think it goes for many studios that, like indie studios that has like one or two founders and mm-hmm. you want to do it all. So you also take on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
We released 2 years, two free games over the years, mm-hmm. as our own games, one called Spit Kiss, then there was Welcome to Ilk, and then Dead Pets, not released yet, but soon.
Oh, okay.
Awesome People has the IP now and will do amazing things with it. And then we also published Ynglet by Swedish developer Niflas.
Mm, right.
So we made some stuff. And it was very much driven by like passion and creative energy and storytelling. Mm. And then last December 2022, I had a baby prematurely.
Mm.
Because of that, I was a long time in hospital.
Oh, yeah.
And because of that, I also got very, very sick. And I basically dealt with health problem and surgeries most of 2023.
Yeah.
And as a consequence of that and some legal challenges regarding tax in Denmark, I decided to close the studio via bankruptcy. It's fast. In end of November last year. So I think a lot of studios and a lot of founders have probably not necessarily because of health, personal health problems like I, but just because of the state of the industry are going through or have gone through a similar experience in 23 and probably some are like in that situation right now. Mm. And I could definitely have used that we speak more openly about that kind of experience and not mm-hmm. only like the rise to star indie success experience as well.
Sure. And I think this highlights the difficulties of being a small founder group. And I think we've had other guests on board and we've talked about the difference between being an employee and a founder and that the responsibilities are very different. And the fewer founders there are, the more responsibility rests on your shoulders. And if you, like in your situation, have health issues, which you can happen to anyone.
Yeah.
And if you're knocked out for a long while running a business at the same time while you're dealing with life and death health stuff, and especially having a new life in the world is, imagine.
Yeah.
Super like challenging.
In red to perspective, like no one's going to give you a medal for doing that.
Yeah.
No. It has huge impacts on the team, on employees, for very obvious and good reasons. And if I could like have done it differently, I would definitely have closed it sooner.
Mm.
But when you are in a situation like that, you don't take the best decisions. And especially because you understand to the full extent the responsibility you have. Laying off people, that's not something you just do for fun.
No.
That's a very, very tough decision that all founders will have to take at some point.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you have all of the partners that sort of like trusted you with their money. Mm. So I think a lot of indies run very long before they sees the conclusion of actually closing the studio.
Okay. And can you tell me a little bit about what was the funding situation for the studio? What was the money coming from, and what was the partner situation?
So finding money was like that was also a hobby. I wanted to stay quite independently. So we worked with a publisher for our first game. We worked with, I think they were called Block and Digital, and then they made Dear Villagers and all of that. We worked with them for our first game, and they were great. And then for the two next games, we worked with Counter Knights, Danish public funding, and all the platform deals that I could possibly combine into it. So it came from many different sources.
Yeah.
And that is also a lot to tackle as a small studio, because then you have like complicated cash flow, basically. But I'm quite proud because I think the kind of games that we made are difficult to find funding for. But we actually managed to get budget to create the vision that we wanted. So,
and how come you ended up in this with these type of games? Was it passion, or was it skill, or was it, how come it? You know, you seem to have a good understanding of the analysis of it's hard to raise money for these type of games, but yet you pursued them. Was that something you learned after the fact, or did you know going into this genre of that it would be difficult?
I did not know how difficult it would be. We also started out small. I think that was smart. A lot of things I did in making these games, I would probably have tackled a little bit differently. And this is just me, like, looking back at my career, and it can tie into the later conversation. But, for example, in Denmark and in a lot of countries in Europe, you have access to cultural money, like public funding for your games, soft money. And often that requires you to have a cultural impact in your game.
Yeah.
And we did like telling stories, but it made it easier for us to go into that direction with the studio. Because when you are a female or minority founder, getting access to actual publishing money or investment money early on in the studio is extremely difficult. So therefore, you will have to rely on the public funding. And I think I see that actually as a pattern overall in our industry, and people can correct me very much discuss this. I think it's an interesting discussion that minority studios very often opt for the soft money and cultural money, because they are never offered a seat at the table where we talk about the private money and the real money from the industry. Maybe that was why we went that direction. Me and my co-founder at the time had lots of different concepts that was also like more mechanically driven. He was a really skilled gameplay designer. So,
Oh, fantastic. Okay, you touched upon something that we'll definitely come back to, but I want to save that for later. You mentioned some learnings for the studio, you know, maybe closing down sooner, the difficulties of raising, any other learnings from these years that you wish you could have passed on to yourself? You could send back a time message to Astrid from 8 years ago. What would you told her?
I think like I had co-founders, but it was obvious for them that like the running the organization, the running a business was not a passion for them. And because you want to keep people in, you want to make sure that everybody is doing where their talent lies. I end up in a situation where the whole sort of like administration and business size was solely my responsibility.
Yeah.
It's fair that it's my task, but when it becomes your responsibility alone, it becomes a very isolated role in your own studio.
Yeah.
I think that's also a very typically indie thing.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I had very high ambition of creating a specific workplace and challenging sort of the norms in the industry. I was very open and I was very transparent about it. And I also see a lot of indies, especially minority people, doing this because it is something you see the flaws and you want to change it. But when you're only one person, that workplace and those things that you put into place is also only effective and in that studio because of the work that you do. Mm-hmm. So of course, like a team always bring like their good energy and a good team spirit and all their skills to the table. But the organizational side and like everything that you will offer as a studio, that relies on you. And then of course, like life hits, like in my case, it took a year. Sometimes it can be a burnout and other things.
Yeah.
Then this will crumble really, really fast because it's run by you, as one individual. I don't know what the perfect, solution is.
No.
But maybe like me reflecting on my story and my mistakes can have other identify this a little bit sooner than I did and hopefully, correct it or work on it or figure out solution.
I think we talk to a lot of people, and if you like listen to the big conversation in the games industry, especially when you look at the background of so many people losing their jobs, and I think that, you know, we see how the industry is developing, and I think there are a lot of people who are just not happy about what they're seeing, and we're talking about, you know, there being accountability on the part of the leaders, wanting to set up studios in a more equitable way. And people do it for different reasons. You know, sometimes you do it because you're a strong believer in, you know, issues of diversity. Sometimes it's more business driven. Sometimes it's product driven. But all of us find us in the situations where we want to build companies and run companies in a more idealistic way, whatever those ideals are. Can you share some of those ideals that you wanted to kind of espouse and build with the studio? Well, you alluded to some, but what are we talking about? Like, obviously diversity is important to you. That's going to be a big topic for today. But what else in terms of running a business in a modern way were you trying to achieve?
So I think that diversity is sort of easy to say, and you can go hire different people, but it's also allowing people to live a life where they are not burnt out. I see burnout as one of the sort of like most expensive things you can do to your employees, especially in a small organization. Probably also a big organization, they just have more money to keep hiring, I guess. But it is very, very expensive when people burn out, and you want to make sure to keep costs low to maximize basically the profit you will have in the end of the game. And by doing that, you need people that are not tired and are not stressed and is good at communicating and is fresh in the morning and can go figure out why we keep hitting a bottleneck exactly at this specific point in our production and how we're going to go about fixing it as a team. So I very much saw the diversity, inclusion, and how we built the organization as a way of in the end become a profitable a company, even with making games with the crazy themes and everything that we put in them. And I think that was very often, at least in Denmark, where I'm based, a misunderstanding that I was doing it solely as sort of, like, of course you do it because you want to change things, but it was like I was rarely perceived as someone that thought about business.
Yeah.
And an understanding of running a business. I was often seen as someone that was maybe a little bit naive in these areas.
Sure.
But I think actually I was very much in the later year aware of the challenges of the kind of product we made and therefore how good of organization I would need in order to actually make this company profitable. And it's not completely delusional to think that narrative games with deep story can be a huge success. We have seen that in the past.
Of course.
So it is just...
Yeah. So it's what I'm hearing is that it was not purely a idealistic kind of approach to things, rather than it was conducting business in a more sustainable and
it's like one way. It's there's not one without the other.
No,
like if there's not profit in a business, if you don't build a profitable thing, like you will not be able to care for a good organization and the other way around. It takes a long time to build that and a lot of resources.
I get it. Like there are many versions of capitalism.
Yeah.
Like, not all versions need to be supremely evil.
No.
Okay, that's fantastic. Okay, we'll come back to some of those things and probably some learnings, but let's move on and talk about where you are right now. Let's talk about Wings. Tell me about Wings. Why was Wings started? How is Wings funded? How does it operate?
Yes. So Wings was started, I think, as a concept in 2018, by Audrey and Peter, our co-founders, and became sort of like an official fund around 2020. And then there are some pretty amazing studios and people who have invested into Wings as well, making it possible for us to go and invest project financing into gender marginalized teams, like female and gender marginalized developers. And we have signed a lot of games over the years. We still have some to be released. And I think beside like providing the funding, Wings has an organization done a lot of great initiatives around diversity and like putting the spotlight on female gender marginalized developers. Here in March, we had the Steam sale, Women Day sale. I didn't conduct it. My colleagues did that, but like I was very, very impressed with that work and more than 400 games. And at the moment, they are sort of like collecting the data and the feedback from that. We also have things like the Maze Diversity Award, where we sort of like put some extra spotlight on these more diverse teams. And that extra labor, that extra work is not something that you would be required to do, and specifically not if you are a regular game fund. But I think Wings have done fantastically there. I can just like say a lot of positive things. I just joined, like,
Still I joined as a fan, you know. So, okay, so Wings sounds like a niche gaming fund plus. It does way more initiatives and supporting stuff, and then others have come in and put in money as well. And so what is your role there today?
My role is a very long title, and it's because it's like lack of a better would say developer relations and business development, and that covers a lot. I'm there full time, and I basically combine like everything I know from like running my own company. So I help and support the developers, or I find the resources they need. So because we're not a publisher, like I'm not releasing the game for them, but I'm there to help them with questions or point them in the right direction. And I see myself as like everything from business development to therapist, because releasing games are hard, and sometimes you just need to rant, talk with someone, and I'm there for that as well. So I get to work with all of the amazing studios that we have signed there, which I really love. And then, of course, like I'm also representing Wings at GDC. I was representing Wings in different kind of meetings and setup. So, that's what I do.
Could you give us a couple of examples of teams that you have signed, either by name or the type of teams they are, the type of games they do, to give give us a sense of what kind of studios exist there?
Yes. So actually, next week, I'm going to visit a team in Switzerland in Zurich. Called Stardust, and they are making the game Grimrock Rose, and I think it's a very good example. Like, I've known a team for a long time where it's just it's very difficult to get the right financing in place to do the vision, but they have a very, very beautiful game, and they are a very smart and skilled team. They did a Kickstarter. They did an amazing campaign on TikTok, and they just basically proved everybody wrong regarding that game. So, and I think that's also what's great in the role of Wings and how the organization worked. Like, I'm also inspired deeply by working with teams like that. And then I hope I can also provide them with the resources they need when creating their game.
Any other team you want to mention? Gonna get us a sense of
Yeah, so this team I haven't like worked that closely with because it's already released, but it's the game Birth. And it's made by a woman called Madison. And I think it's just also a really good example of like what Wings can do in spotting very unique titles that then can become very profitable. So she released the game on Steam and then later Switch. And in the game, you collect your bones, like you walk around.
I'm watching the trailer now. Yeah, there's a lot of bones.
There's a lot of bones and organs as well that you're collecting in like these very, very smart game designed puzzles. There's no like narrative in dialogue, but there's a lot of story and world building in it, and it's extremely smartly done. But I can definitely also see with my experience from the industry that this is the kind of game that can sometimes struggle to find its place. And yeah, I'm really proud, even though I wasn't there at the time,
that
Wings identified that title and was able to make it there.
Well, I have to ask, Wings is listed as co-listed as a publisher, but
we are not a publisher. So it's project financing. And like basically we provide everything the developer need from like developer to marketing within the budget. And it's sort of their responsibility to figure out like how this money is spent. And create the, for example, like a strong marketing campaign. And because of that, the revenue share is also lower than what you would usually see from a publisher. The reason why Wings is listed there on Steam is because then we can create a synergy amongst all the titles. It also makes it easier to make games visible around like women games, sales, and stuff like that. So it's basically to boost them. And I think some maybe just put Wings as a publisher, but many have like their own studio and then Wings. So it's just like, you know, everything is linked to a page.
I understand. Yeah. So let's talk about some of the business model. You mentioned project investment, not equity investment. And why not? How come? This is an unusual. Most investment goes into equity and owning directly in the companies.
But yeah, like there are a couple of funds out there doing the project financing. I think we in all aspects see more creative ways of like micro publishers and so on as well, but the unique thing about project financing is that because the developer would keep more of the profit for themselves, I think we are creating a situation where like we get return of our investment faster than it was equity. And the thing with equity is basically you want to scale fast, like you want to exit, like that's the whole deal about most equity investment, even from like from the early stage investments up to VC. For Wings, because we are a small fund, the return of investment is of course important, but we are also with this helping to build studios that are profitable and hopefully self-sustainable. And if they want to work with us again, and if it's a success, like we would love to work with studios again. But a success story for me is also a studio that would make enough revenue to just go fund the next game.
Yep. Okay. So I'm hearing a lot of similarities about between you and the company Hooded Horse that I work with. And their business principle is we'd rather get to a point where the developer is making enough money so they're self-sufficient and self-funding, and they choose to work with us again and we don't have to put in money next time. So it becomes a self-perpetuating kind of system rather than building dependency. I like that Wings is very transparent about the business terms. They're right there on the website. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about like what's the reception to that? Why are they transparent? So some companies absolutely don't put their, you know, most games funds don't put their details there super openly.
Yeah, I think I don't get it, the secrecy. Maybe if you're big and corporate and super evil, it's good to be secret, evilly secret or like secretly evil. I think the main issue when you are a minority person, I think it goes for all minorities, like all basically non-white cis men in this industry, is the access to knowledge. And not like a quick talk, like find a, this is how you get a publisher, but like the deep industry gossip knowledge where you understand exactly what's going on and why you are signing this deal compared to another deal. Transparency is very, very important when we want to break down these barriers in the industry and get people to the table. And therefore, I think it's important to be transparent about the kind of terms and the kind of deal you have. It's also good because people know what they're pitching into.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So just for the sake of the people listening, so that it's very clearly listed. Developer first, your focus is helping teams build a sustainable studio, revenue share from the first dollar, which is a very important thing for a lot of companies, obviously. Complete creative and business control. Developers obviously keep IP rights. And then you've already mentioned that you as a fund come in and help and support in those areas with expertise. And sometimes just a shoulder to cry on.
Yeah.
Because making games and releasing games is very hard. I also like and you clearly state you fund up to 500K. There's a simple online application. And this is my favorite part. It says 1 month turnaround on submission. I have to ask you, are you able to hit the 1 month?
Not right now because of TGC. But we are sending out emails and like, then, we are so sorry.
No, it's fine. It's aspirational. And if you're able to do it around the month, I would still say you're very, very good. Because one of the prevailing problems in our industry is the slow maybe.
Yeah.
You don't get a yes. You don't get a no. You get a slow maybe.
Keep me posted.
Keep me posted. What and I'm guilty of this myself. It is the everlasting entropy that puts us in the slow maybe. But you also have, which I also love as a final bullet, is a clear 3-page contract. Which makes a lot of lawyers very sad, of course, because they love the 300-page.
And it's a good contract, so there's not that many red lines to put in.
No, I'm a very big fan of the plain language contract trend. And for those that you don't know, is that it's that contracts can be written in plain language; they don't have to be written in legalese, which makes it a lot easier for most of us to read and understand them. If anyone's read the iTunes terms and agreement, terms and service contract, it's quite painful.
I wonder if their lawyers even like...
They have not, of course. No. Crazy. Okay, let's get back to the topic. So can you describe to us what is the ideal team to reach out to you? If somebody's listening today, how should they, like, what kind of team is ideal for you that you would go like, holy hell, you send it to everyone in the team, like, we have to talk to these guys next week?
So the process is actually, it's a committee of some extremely talented women helping sort of reviewing the games. I think that's important to mention. It's not me. You can't bribe me, basically. That's smart.
You can still try, but it won't get you bribed.
Like, but you can. but I think it's important that you understand what it means about being a fund and project financing. And you can ask us questions if it's not clear after reading the webpage, and I will do my best to answer. Definitely do that. Like, any question goes, just write it to us on the contact email and I'll do my best to answer it. But I think if you are looking for a publisher because marketing is what you hate the most in the world, or if you in any way like feel I need that kind of handholding that a publisher could do, it's maybe not the right fit. Sometimes it can be still. It's so different. If it's like, depends on budget and our schedule and so on. But if you want to go with Wings, it's because you want to self-publish the game and build up the team and knowledge and experience within your own studio. It can be that you outsource the marketing, but then it's a partner of your choice. It's not the publisher deciding. So you can go with the partner that you feel comfortable with and you feel have the right voice for what you are as a team. If you identify with that, then I think Wings would be a very, very good fit. I think you also, like, when you are so transparent as Wings and have like this focus on diversity, it's nice if you align in that mm-hmm. like general thought of like how wings operate. It's important when we say 500k that that's 500k. So if you need 500k for development and you don't have marketing included, and yeah. I see that from time to time, like then our budget is too small as it is at the moment. So it has to be everything included around that. It has to be premium PC console. Mm-hmm. It would be amazing to do some mobile stuff again. We have done that with Elevate and together with Code Coven and Netflix. Mm-hmm. But at the moment it's premium PC console. And it's not because other business models, other platforms are not a good business plan. It's just because we don't have the expertise there, to provide the right support. You need to have a demo. I think I want to do like a blog post or some article around what the good demo is. Because all of us ask for demos and you're just supposed to like make it without money and then sell like the full concept of a game. So there I want to provide some good. But a demo can be super, super short. But just have one really, really tight level scene, whatever it needs with a new genre of your game. And like all genres, that's important to say, because often people believe, I've heard that also at GDC, that we fund narrative games because it's diverse. And if you look at our portfolio, like, yeah, there's story and narrative in some of them, but it's not a,
Understood. Can you tell us, what are the tough decisions you have to make in terms of business decisions over at Wings? Like, how do you measure some of these different teams against each other? And it's...
It's always tough. I think a lot of business developers, scouts from, like, funds and publishers and investors can relate that you come across amazing teams.
Yeah.
But it's just not fitting in the budget. It's just not fitting with the kind of numbers you want to see on Steam. There's so many things that has to line up. I'm a little bit precautious of saying like specific things, because a due diligence and evaluation process of a project goes in many ways. Mm-hmm. So it's both the games, but it's also like how do you conduct your business, basically. It's always tough decisions, because you see the most amazing and unique products, and if you had all the money in the world, like all of these products would deserve money. As a fund, you also want to see games that become profitable. And that's my and the team's sort of like judgment. There's definitely games where you judge this will never become profitable, and then it's released. And fool on you. It was highly successful. And you try to run your numbers, but at the end of the day, it's also gut feeling.
So. Understood. I think this kind of brings us to one of the major questions that I had for you. And I mean, I think an overarching question is like, how do you balance staying true to the charter of Wings and your one of your overarching goals to kind of promote marginalized groups while balancing business sustainability? It's always these, like any fund, any organization running business always ideally finds itself in a position where you have to weigh all these different factors against each other. Yeah. And specifically when it comes to diversity is something that I've encountered. And I know a specific case and ended up discussing with an industry colleague, or they were having a big portfolio meeting and they had a very clear charter that they wanted to promote marginalized groups. And they were looking at a couple of different options. And in the end, it was between two projects. And one of them was from a group of people that was more marginalized and definitely on the, you know, the way they measured the criteria of how it would promote their other diversity goals, this team would have ranked higher. But at the same time, they were also agreed that project's commercial viability was lower compared to another team that was less diverse, but was more of a safe commercial bet. And the big discussion then was, are we actually promoting diverse causes more by
going for the project that has better chance of sustainability? Or should we go with this project that is more diverse, but has a much harder chance to succeed? And in the end, they ended up going with the first project, the one that was more diverse, but had less chances of viability. The game was released, didn't do commercially well, and the studio ended up folding. Mm. So I think I struggle with this as well. And we talked about this at Paradox and many other places talk about portfolio. How do you balance this?
I think, first of all, like this setup, and I also had it with like the diversity higher versus the experience. Like it all builds on the pre-consumption that it's one or the other.
Yeah.
And of course you will probably come across examples like that, but we come across tons of other examples where this is not the case, but we don't remember them because it's not a black and white choice in a portfolio meeting setting. Sure. So I think it's important to take it from that step. Like, I strongly and firmly believe that marginalized developers, female and gender marginalized, which is the focus on Wings, has the potential to become just as or more successful in the industry.
Yeah.
The main struggle is getting that seat in the table. Mm. And because of having a selecting committee from women from all around the world, a very diverse selection of women assessing these games, and because of us being a small organization, I don't know if the founders and CEO agree, but like, I feel we're very punk and we can do things by heart.
Yeah.
We can act accordingly and take the right decisions with informed knowledge from the people. I think it's a very unique setting to have such a diverse committee for selecting the games. Mm-hmm. And they are highly skilled and they are very, very focused on that we need to prove that these games can become profitable, because otherwise we are sort of like undermining the whole message of Wings. Sometimes judgment can maybe even be harder.
Yep.
And that is probably also what can happen in no situation where you put like the commercial versus the diversity next to each other. We in general evaluate women and marginalized genders lesser in the industry, more naive, more inexperienced, and that's why it's very important to have other women then help to assess these games and understand these teams, because that sort of eliminate that understanding where you often in a pitch situation are perceived as inexperienced. Like, I can still be perceived as inexperienced. I'm 37 on Sunday. Been in the industry for 8 years. I ran my own studio. I work for another game fund and now I'm working here. And sometimes I still have to answer the question if I'm experienced in the industry. So it comes down to that. I don't know if it answered the questions. Maybe I'm just moving it in a wrong different direction. But I think it's the beginning of the answer to the question, at least.
No, I agree. Like, I understand what you're saying is that, and I also generally reject these black and white kind of
But it's a good example.
It's and it's never black and white. Sometimes it's good for a theoretical discussion to talk about it, but I think that it's interesting, at least because I approach it from a business perspective. And I think you mentioned something interesting here, is that one of the main things with Wings is offering avenues for people who do not get a seat at the table for multiple reasons. But within the context of Wings, you have the power to choose projects that have different commercial viabilities. You said yourself, like, you know, sometimes these more diverse teams end up getting shoehorned into the narrative genre because reasons, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes those games are easier to make. Narrative games who want to tell a specific story versus, say more system-driven games.
Yeah.
But different genres, as you've said, have different commercial viability.
Mm.
In the long term for Wings, Wings in 10 years' time that decides to do no narrative games whatsoever
and another Wings that decides to only do narrative games.
Ah, so we should like
both. It's still Wings. You're still yeah. picking, you know, marginalized gendered groups that need help and getting them a seat at the table. But I think that one of these Wings is going to have a better time commercially, probably.
So a system-driven game cost more.
Yes.
Yes. So if we could make the Wings hooded horses. Yeah. I would love that personally, because that's my genre of games. But yeah, I think if we want a game to be twice profitable, sometimes it can be a small narrative project, and it costs 30k.
Yeah,
and that is still like a good success. And Wings made profit, the studio made profit,
sure,
and they can go scale and make a little bit more expensive game the next time. So it's also a matter of scale. I want to have a little bit more of those bigger tickets, like closer to the 500k.
I
also know that if you give the developers more time and more resources, they can maybe build these games that can reach like a bigger market on Steam and not be twice profitable but 10th profitable.
Yeah, of course.
But it needs to keep be a good balance of both, I think. I think it's and that's the cool thing about Wings, to have a portfolio where we have like like Birth, it's like basically it's one developer that is very profitable.
Yeah.
Things like that has to be there. But it's also interesting to have teams where it's like a little bit bigger team, a little bit bigger organization, and maybe more ambitions in what kind of mechanics are introduced to the player.
Yeah, I completely understand that. And then you said the word I was going for, which is a portfolio approach, right?
Yeah.
You're not putting all the eggs in one basket, you're diversifying. And that's why it's interesting. And really the big reason I bring it up, because I think that 500K is quite considerable.
Mm.
Like so many of, and it's not going to be any secret for anyone who knows me, the companies I work with and the podcasts, that I'm a big fan of system-driven games because, yes, they are sometimes more expensive to make, but you can also make quite, you get a lot of mileage out of the games.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if the core system, okay, we could talk a lot about.
So, but to me, it's like, man, I would love to see a roguelike deck builder game, which is very popular and doing very well and often made by small teams, but made with a team that fits your charter and the kind of marginalized groups that you want to premiere. That would be wonderful. Like,
I would like if anybody have that and fits our criteria, like send it our way.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. There you heard it first. That's fantastic. Okay, good. And I think this is, I think the challenge today, and not to get too political about it, is that we live in a polarized world where everyone wants to reduce things to black and white instead of shades of gray. And what we know is that reality has more nuances. And especially, I think social media makes it easy to people to just jump to one or the other. And I think that as the industry keeps struggling with diversity and figuring out how to navigate this, I think it is good that there are people there who can kind of walk the walk and marry and bridge the gap between diverse causes and commercial viability. It's not one or the other.
Exactly. And we can at least offer transparency.
Yeah.
And hopefully that is a starting point of changing bits by bits in the industry. I do think the industry have changed for the better. Like, I don't know if it's because my network or my experience expanded the industry, but from when I started out making my own studio and I pitched a Danish investor, they are not around anymore. And they're like, we invested in women before, so we consider that high risk. And that was sort of the end of the negotiation. Where there's actually... There is places to go, not only if you, like Wings are focused on female-led studios, that is also fun for developers of colors. Like, there are at least something. We still have less money to distribute, but there is at least a place to go, and I think that is a positive.
Yeah. Do you see, are there other funds like Wings? Are you, what's the landscape like?
Are there other funds with a similar model? Like Carlton Knights is actually a very similar model where I worked before as an advisor. But if it's that, there are focus, like there's Humble has a focus on black developers. And there is another fund where they say at least that they're focused on female, like queer and minorities in industry as general. It's American fund. And now I even wrote it down yesterday. The name slipped my mind. So I think there is like more focus on this. We also see the big consoles having diversity initiatives. And I also think within publishers that are also like different ways of like, yeah, either the diversity focus or creating prototype funding as a way of like spotting the teams earlier. Like there have been experiments around that as well in the landscape. I think Wings is still very, very unique in the way it's operating.
Fantastic. So and what's kind of tying things together? What's your outlook? Where do you think, what will we see from Wings in the next 5 years?
In the next 5 years, I think we're going to sign a little bit more games and a few that are bigger, like closer to the 500K. And I hope, especially with me being here full time, that I can sort of like support these developers. So we will start seeing the studios we have right now in Wings go and create their second, third, fourth game on their own and become strong voices in the industry. So yeah, that's what I hope. It is very new to have a role like me in Wings, so hope to, to push that. Yeah.
Okay, and what are the best ways to get in touch with you and Wings? Is it just get in touch through the website, or are you going to be seeing you at all the major shows?
We try
Gamescom and Nordic Game.
We do like events, meetups. We did a coffee with Wings at EDC. Hopefully, do something similar around Malmö in May and for Gamescom. But the best way to pitch us is not DM me on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, Messenger, WhatsApp. It's by going via the application form on our webpage. And because of the way that we are reviewing games, like we will get back to you. And we will look at all of the pitches that are submitted through that form. So if people are reaching out to me in other ways, I will always like say, go submit to the form. Same goes for events. We do very few pitch meetings. We anyway need the game in front of the committee, so people have to go through the online form and resources and the webpage.
Yeah, fantastic. It would be lovely to have you back at some point and dig into one of the cases and maybe do a postmortem or look into something.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Get a sense of how did the process go from first contact with you? How did the crying on the shoulder go? How did the game release go? And what was the financial result of the game?
Yeah, that would be that'll be fun for some of the things we're looking at the moment. Yeah.
Okay, I'll ask you as I always do to all of our guests as a final question. What have you been playing recently? If you have any time to play games besides,
I only play Against the Storm.
Oh
yeah,
do you now? Okay, fantastic. And,
because it has like a quick loop. That I can do it while my partner put the kids to bed. And I think like all people with small kids and maybe their own studios or busy career, like that is the time I have. But it never becomes boring. So I've been playing that. And it's been like, except all of the bills and play games submitted to us, I play them as well. Like then that's been the only game for a year.
Fantastic. That's I also use it as it's very pause friendly.
Yeah.
So it's always easy to have it going, and then when I have a little bit of time, I play a little bit. Fantastic. Well, Astrid, thank you so much for coming to the podcast and sharing some insights into how the fund operates and your background and the learnings that you had over the years. And thank you to Wings for making the industry a better place. And I also want to thank our listeners for spreading the word about the podcast and sharing the news. And if anyone is listening and knows of any team looking for funding that would fit Wing's profile, please give them a nudge and tell them about the podcast and the episode and point them in the direction of Wings so we can get more roguelikes out there with a sustainable, great business model made by groups that generally don't get to set up the table. And with that, we're going to sign off, and thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.